In addition to tight races here in Wisconsin, there was election drama around the rest of the country, which with the most of the results in, Democrats will regain control of the House of Representatives, while Republicans added to their majority in the U.S. Senate.
President Trump said today that his party outperformed expectations for midterm elections, while Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi claimed the results were evidence that the American people want checks and balances on the Trump administration.
Craig Gilbert is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Craig, welcome back to the show.
Nice to be with you.
Well, we touched on it just briefly there, but there's kind of something for everybody in the elections yesterday. Each side could claim victory, at least in some senses, right?
Yeah, I think that's a reflection of kind of that balkanized quality right now to the political landscape, where different things are happening among different groups of voters and in different parts of the country. And we saw that certainly in Wisconsin, where you had, you know, this sort of massive Democratic turnout in the super blue cities like Milwaukee and Madison. You had kind of a depletion of the Republican, the traditional Republican vote in the suburbs. And then you had enough Republican strength in the outlying areas and the rural areas to kind of prevent the Democrats from making gains in the rest of the state. So all those things were happening in Wisconsin. They were happening nationally in the House results, where the suburbs killed the Republicans, in the Senate, where in the red states and more rural states, it claimed, some Democratic Senate incumbents. So yeah, you're right. A little bit of everything.
And the predictions ended up being kind of true. The Democrats gained enough in the House to take it over. They didn't in the Senate. Republicans actually advanced. That was kind of well within what people were looking at. But it seemed like in the expectation game, you had Democrats thinking, okay, this might be it. We might go nuts. 50 seats in the House, advances in the Senate. And I was hearing Republican leaders say, we've got a really good shot at keeping control of the House. And it ended up being right there in the middle, what everybody kind of thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and in the middle of probably, what we would have expected stepping back, but it was still a good election for Democrats. I mean, they took over the House. They ended monopoly control of government in Washington by the Republican Party, and where they suffered losses in the Senate, they were playing on a really tilted playing field. I mean, these were very, very red states. The governors races, Democrats made inroads, but they did have some major disappointments in places like Ohio and Florida. Again, looking at these states, you had kind of like the famous upper Midwestern blue wall that turned for Trump, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, kind of turning back for the Democrats, with most of the big races in those three states turning against the Republican Party. So you're right. When you step back, nothing too much should shock us, but when you kind of peer under the hood, at least particularly in Wisconsin, you do see some really striking numbers.
And looking nationally again, the New York Times had this visualization that I thought was interesting. They looked in each race, regardless of who won, and just said, okay, what was the swing in votes since the last election, these House races? And there, a lot of House seats moved significantly toward the Democratic side, even if that wasn't enough to switch who won.
Yeah, and again, it probably correlates with the makeup of these districts. I mean, obviously the biggest Democratic gains were in the suburban districts, including the districts that had voted for Hillary Clinton, but even some districts that had voted for Donald Trump. But still, the more kind of suburban, the higher education these districts are, the more likely they were to turn against the Republican Party. I mean, this does seem to be part of an unfolding pattern of kind of a growing education divide, kind of a growing class divide that predates the Trump era, but is really pronounced in the Trump era.
Touched for just a moment on what this means for Congress now. In the House, Democrats control it. They can do things like control the House Intelligence Committee, say, and run their own investigations. It's a lot easier to do that in the majority there. With the Republican control of the Senate, this means President Trump's judicial nominees still have pretty smooth sailing. If he has to do something like, I don't know, replace an attorney general, which seems to be in the works now in the news today, he still has a friendly landscape in the U.S. Senate.
True. I mean, the ultimate, leverage that each party has over the other is the ability to prevent either side from really doing anything. And certainly, one of the exceptions to that is the Senate confirmation role. But beyond that, which, and again, that's been evident, for the past 2 years. What's changed, of course, is there's no longer a Republican House. There's just not a whole lot the president can get done or the Senate can get done beyond confirmations and treaties without the House. At the same time, you know, while the Democrats have an ability to do a lot of oversight, you know, they can't really get anything done. I mean, the Republicans in the House couldn't get anything through the Senate when the same party controlled both chambers. So the Democrats it's really about oversight and opposition for them.
Well, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, maybe soon to be House Speaker again, talked a little bit about this topic. This is last night.
Today is more than about Democrats and Republicans. It's about restoring the Constitution's checks and balances to the Trump administration.
Craig, I know polling had tried to get at this issue, and it may be kind of a nuanced one for a poll, but this idea of, okay, are people voting in some cases because they want that kind of check on President Trump, even if maybe they kind of like President Trump?
Well, I think there is evidence in the polling for that. I mean, a lot of people did want that. I mean, we know that there are a number of Trump voters out there that are conflicted in the sense that they don't like everything about President Trump, and they may not be ready to disapprove of his performance or try to cast him out of office, but they may want some check on him. They may want him to tone it down a little bit. So, I think there's some evidence that there's an appetite out there. It's not like, you know, everybody's suddenly voting for a divided government, but it is the consequence when you have the kind of divided political climate we have. And it's also, there's just sort of a longstanding historical pattern in the last 20 or 30 years where, you know, the parties are so evenly divided, it's so competitive, and they're so far apart from each other that when one party is kind of handed the keys to the kingdom, the voters generally at the first available opportunity 2 years later take some of that power away because they either fear overreach or they think there's been overreach.
Talking to Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, breaking down national results. We'll also spend some time here in Wisconsin after yesterday's election day. We just touched on the House, the Senate. President Trump took a lot of pride in Senate pickups. Here he is at the White House today.
In the last 80 years, a sitting president's party has only gained a cumulative total of 8 Senate seats, averaging 1 per decade. So if we picked up 2, 3, or 4, that's a big percentage of that number.
So as you said, Craig, the map, the quirks of the map and where these elections were not in Democrats' favor. They were defending a lot of seats, and they were defending them in places where Donald Trump had won. They were in red states. Still, it's not nothing for Republicans to pick these up.
No, I mean, it was an historically bad map for Democrats. And so, you know, you have to factor that in. But, you know, the Republicans will take their wins where they can get them. It wasn't a 100% perfect night for Republicans in the Senate. I mean, they lost a seat in Nevada. Again, these, you know, senators they once had hopes of knocking off, like Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin and maybe Debbie Stabenow in Michigan. I mean, a bunch of senators in the purple states just cruised to reelection. But it was really in the deep red states that you saw some Democratic incumbents ousted, and that's, you know, that's a trouble. The most troubling thing about that for Democrats is that will they ever get those seats back? I mean, in an age when these elections are nationalized, it gets harder and harder for a senator to stay in office if it's a Democratic senator in a red state or a Republican senator in a blue state. So it tilts the playing field against the Republicans long term in the Senate, against the Democrats long term in the Senate.
I want to get into the minds of voters to the extent we can. Craig, we talked to you about a bunch of pieces you wrote. You went to different congressional districts around Wisconsin. You took your numbers game with you, but then you talked to people and got the stories behind why they thought and voted the way they did. With that experience behind you, what kind of things are you thinking about? What kind of questions are coming up in your mind a day after Election Day?
Well, I mean, certainly you had massive Democratic enthusiasm in many places. At the same time, you know, I'm really interested in with divided government in both Madison and Washington. There is an appetite among a significant segment of the electorate for compromise. And, you know, it's not necessarily in the cards, but it'll be interesting to watch how the two parties approach this, both, again, in Madison and in Washington, a Democratic governor and a Republican legislature in Madison, a Republican president and a Democratic House in Washington, whether they feel any particular public pressure going into the next election cycle to try to show some evidence that they are not intransigent, that they've tried to work with the other side, or whether, you know, whether we're just sort of doomed to both gridlock and kind of, you know, bitter conflict. You do talk to voters and you do run into voters, and it's a significant number who feel like they're kind of in between these warring factions, and they'd kind of like people to sort of behave a little bit and play well with others.
We're talking to Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at last night's midterm results on the national level.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What message do you think yesterday's mixed results send? How do you think a split Congress will function? What races around the country were you watching? And what do you think they signal for elections in the years to come? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org.
We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're continuing our look at the national midterm results with Craig Gilbert. He's Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Was there a race you were watching? What did you think of the outcomes nationally or in Wisconsin? And I want to follow up on that point that Craig just brought up. Is there a mood for compromise? Do you want to see compromise? Do you feel like even if you lean toward a party or the other one, that they don't really represent you, that they're not really doing the job that you want them to do? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. To your calls now, Will is with us in Eau Claire. Will, hi.
Hi, hi, folks. Good conversation. Wanted to follow up on Craig's point about compromise. I think that the current mode of promoting campaign undermines effective governing. And I don't think that until the electorate makes it very clear that the compromise that's necessary to govern effectively, that's undermined by campaigning, is important to them, it's going to happen, you know, because politicians all want the same thing, another term. I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Will, thanks a lot for calling on. Craig, call again. Craig, do you see these structural reasons that make it a hard to compromise, reasons that politicians might ignore constituents who want them to compromise?
Sure. I mean, there have been tremendous disincentives to compromise. I mean, that's why we're in the situation we're in. I mean, people don't necessarily get rewarded by their own parties and by the most avid, you know, partisans in their own parties for trying to work with the other side. You know, there's a reason this is the politics we have. So it's far from probable that we're going to kind of break out of these patterns. But I think it also kind of ensures a just kind of chronic frustration on the part of a large segment of the electorate who are not, you know, members of the partisan warring tribes, and who would genuinely kind of like to see a healthier political culture, and also they'd like to see some work across party lines in Washington.
That makes me think of the issue of gerrymandering. If you have a safe seat, why not elect the most extreme, the most conservative or liberal candidate you can in that district? Do you see that playing a role here in Wisconsin, elsewhere in the country?
Well, there's a lot of debate among political scientists about whether that's really a prime mover behind the problems we're talking about. I think it's certainly, there are certainly a lot of other really important causes. I think gerrymandering has its own issues and problems when it just comes to kind of democratic values and accountability, because it sort of destroys competitiveness and with it the kind of meaningful elections that you know, where outcomes are in suspense. And it also, you know, it just locks in a power for parties in the majority, even when they don't enjoy, even when they're unpopular. And that's just sort of kind of troubling from a civics point of view. So I think gerrymandering brings with it its own issues. I think even without gerrymandered districts, I think we'd have a problem with kind of partisan tribalism.
Let's go back to our callers now. Tom is on the line in Madison. Tom, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just got back from the 1,999th solidarity thing at the Capitol, and we are very, very happy about the new bunch of candidates and politicians that have come into the arena. There are people there, I think, like Tony Evers, who are willing to cross over those lines and talk to people about actually getting things done. And I think hopefully we're signaling an end to the partisanship and the gerrymandering that drove actual conservatives like Dale Schultz to actually to quit the Republican Party and because he was being primaried by the extreme right. Hopefully this is a new day of cooperation.
And Tom, I want to ask, since we've got you on the line, you're with the Solidarity Singers. There's been speculation that when Governor Walker leaves office that the sing-alongs might end. What do you think? Oh, we lost him. Okay, I guess it'll remain a mystery until Inauguration Day. But Craig, to his point, he's happy to see progressives. He sees maybe the temperature going down to where maybe older-style conservative Republicans and across-the-aisle Democrats can work together.
Well, I think we'll all hold our breath. I mean, it's just, you know, this hasn't been the pattern in kind of modern politics, but it wasn't that long ago where the pattern was different, where you had, you know, for example, Tommy Thompson working as a Republican governor with a Democratic legislature and Bill Clinton as a Democratic president working with a Republican Congress. So it wasn't that long ago that it was done, but it does seem like there's a lot of obstacles today.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Craig Gilbert with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at election results, what we can glean from them in Wisconsin and around the country. Back to your calls. Adam is with us in central Wisconsin. Adam, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What's your story, Adam?
I'm curious about the medical marijuana and recreational, too. I would qualify for medical marijuana and you guys don't talk that much about it, and I was just curious what Evers' real stand is on it. I specifically voted for the first time because Walker was so dead set against it.
All right, Adam, thanks for the call. So medical marijuana is a motivating issue for Adam, maybe others. There are also referenda in a couple counties around the state. Craig, is this the kind of thing that can drive people to vote, as in this case, for the first time?
I think some people, but I just don't know how big the numbers are, and I haven't really followed this issue as closely as some other people at my paper, so I'm probably not the best person to ask.
All right, Adam, thanks for the call. Robert joins us now in Madison. Robert, hi. Are you there, Robert? Okay, we don't have Robert. We'll try Ann in Stevens Point. Ann, hello.
Hi there. I'm a progressive. I'm delighted that Tony Evers won. I'm delighted that the House was returned to the Democrats. But I and many of us who canvassed and everything want the parties to work together. We want the Republicans in our state legislature to work with this new governor. And I absolutely want the House to work with President Trump, even though I very much dislike Trump. We must work together, and that's what we out here want. We are not as divided as people would say. We want guys to work together.
And thanks a lot for the call. We're getting a lot of calls along these lines, Craig, and not just in this segment. This appetite seems to be there, but how do you mobilize that? How do you make that a message that will motivate politicians to listen and compromise?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question. Like I said, over the past year when I've been going around the state talking to people, this is like a major theme of the conversations I've had with voters. I mean, so many voters feel like neither party kind of really perfectly or even, you know, all that well represents their constellation of views, and they are deeply frustrated with the party system, and they would like to see people working together. And so that's out there. And it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be a really interesting test in both Madison and Washington of whether it will be business as usual or not.
Time for one more quick call. Bob is with us in Madison. Bob, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. Briefly, what did you want to tell us?
I'll be real quick. I think the governor-elect could extend some compromise as far as picking his cabinet and try to pick some moderates for his cabinet that can work with the Assembly and the Senate, and then also with the budget coming up. That is going to be really important that the two sides work together, because the budget's always a hard thing to get through. But I think,
Bob, I'm going to jump in. We just have a minute or so left. Craig, the budget might be a really big test of how well these guys can play together.
Yeah, I mean, it's a conservative legislature, and you're going to have a Democratic governor, so there's clearly going to be some pretty big gaps there in terms of their ability to kind of work across the aisle. But there were things that the legislature disagreed with Scott Walker, a Republican governor, and so maybe on things like roads, who knows? Maybe there is some potential on issues that aren't so highly kind of charged with, you know, hot button, you know, political, with hot button politics that separates the parties. I mean, we just, you know, I don't honestly know what to tell you about what's going to happen, but certainly, I mean, the potential is there for bitter conflict, and maybe the potential is there for something better.
Craig, thanks for joining us after a late night. That was Craig Gilbert, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, with us to dig into the results of yesterday's midterm elections from around the country. We'll have more conversations about those elections coming up, and join us tomorrow at 4:30. We're going to be looking for your calls, more of your calls, your reactions, your hopes, maybe your fears for the future after the outcome of yesterday's elections.